The White Sox, they lost to Cleveland 4-1. Tonight, the Brewers and Cubs are off. The White Sox play again in Cleveland. NFL Thursday Night Football, the Jets meet Cleveland. Then on Sunday, the Packers play the Redskins at noon. The Bears play the Cardinals at 3:25. Now the WGTD Thursday forecast from the National Weather Service. Cloudy and humid this morning with more rain. Then sunny and hot for the afternoon. A high of 89 inland, 84 near Lake Michigan. The heat index near 97 today. Also, a moderate swim risk for Lake Michigan today because of breaking waves and currents. You're advised to stay away from dangerous areas like piers, breakwalls, and river outlets. Still some rain in the area. 68 degrees were seen. 69 now in Kenosha. Wind from the east at 7. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, and on this very soggy Thursday morning, I'm really glad that our two morning show guests made it here safely for part one of today's program. Nick Berudian is the founder and artistic director of the Bell Ensemble. And if you have not seen a performance of the Bell Ensemble over the last several years, then you've really missed out on some of the loveliest and most innovative concert programs to be seen here in southeastern Wisconsin. It's a small vocal ensemble, and they have done all kinds of different things in all kinds of different venues and settings and scenarios. And their newest season is about to begin with something very, very special. And also with us in the studio this morning is Edson Melendez, who is the Associate Director of the Bell Ensemble and Head of the Board of Directors, and someone who has been a very prominent part of many of these performances with his fine tenor voice. And the program which opens their season, the program called Two Roads Converged, A Marriage of American Voices, is actually Edson's idea. And so I'm glad that both of these gentlemen can be here to talk about the two performances that are coming up this weekend and about some of the other performances that will comprise the Bell Ensemble's newest season. Nick Berudian, Edson Melendez, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be here.
Thank you for having us again.
Good to have you here. Glad you made it through the tempest that is out there today. Nick, is this season three or season four? I've lost count.
This is season number four, believe it or not. I lose count myself.
Time flies. Just take us back to when you created the Bell Ensemble. What was, in a sense, going on in your life, and what did you see or not see going on in southeastern Wisconsin that prompted you to take this leap and create this group?
Well, it was almost accidental. I had been singing with the Florentine Opera Chorus and had met a few people, a few fellow members of the chorus who I joined in a few projects with a group called SUPA, which some of our listeners will remember probably. Southeast Wisconsin Performing Arts had a really great summer opera program for young people, and lessons and carols at Christmas time. And that group was actually sort of winding down, pretty consciously winding down by the time I I got there, actually.
Right, the founders had moved away, and so it was shifting and so on.
Yeah, but I saw this this great opportunity for because what they had done and what they were still doing, even in the wind down, were really fun programs that involved a lot of young performers, and I saw a need there, and or at least an opportunity to engage young performers like those, including many of those that were a part of SUPA. I had a couple of pet projects on my list at the time, including an Armenian music concert and a concert of Danish Baroque music, and which had been kind of rumbling around my brain for a long time, and I decided just to do them. And in the process of putting together those two programs, I received a grant from the Racine Arts Council, one of their ArtSeed grants, which have helped so many small arts organizations and individual artists in Racine County. And that allowed me to, that inspired me to think a little bit bigger. And I decided, well, I've got two programs that I'm planning. Why not plan one or two more and call it a season? And so Edson and I brainstormed a name, and Bell Ensemble is what we came up with. And we actually kicked off that season with a program that Edson also pioneered, our Taste of Oktoberfest. And that was our first wine and song pairing, which we do regularly at Uncorked in Racine, where we pair wines of a particular heritage, in that case German, for Oktoberfest, with songs of the same heritage. That was how we began in 2015. And since then, our wine and song pairings have continued. And we've also had three full seasons now of major concerts as well. I'm particularly excited about this concert because about this season, because just having been around now, around the block a few times, we're more organized than we have been, and we've been able to produce the whole season at once, like a real organization.
An organization in more ways than one. And it's like, so you have a sense right now of the entire season, the full arc, and most of the logistics already in place. And
yeah, which is exciting for us, and I hope for those for our audience too, to be able to see down the road what to look forward to this year.
And I think probably something else important to for people to understand about the Bell Ensemble, it's one of the things that makes it distinctive, is the sort of shifting personnel that make it this kind of vibrant organism in which you're not seeing exactly the same folks up on that stage concert after concert after concert.
Yes. These past 3 years have been a wild ride of experiments and exploring what performers we can engage and how those performers can work together. This year, we have we've established a core group of singers kind of at the center of our collective, because it has become clear that there's value in simply performing together regularly. And so I'm really proud that we have eight singers who will be a part of at least two of our performances, two of our major performances this year together. And those eight singers you'll hear on this upcoming program, with which we kick off the season, Two Roads Converged.
I love the title, and the idea is great. Two Roads Converged, a marriage of American voices. So Edson Melendez, this is one of your ideas. Can you trace the beginning of it?
Sure. We wanted to really take a look at some of the the wealth of American poetry, and then we started thinking, how is the treatment of this poetry different in the hands of American composers? Obviously, the poetry is written to international acclaim, and American poetry is well-regarded throughout the world. But we wanted to know what the soundscape of this poetry was in the hands of talented American composers. So we did some research, and we found some great settings of American poetry. And it gave us the opportunity to approach this work from a very different perspective than you may have heard it before. the fact that there's only eight singers, and you know, for a piece like the Frostiana, or perhaps a piece like we're doing two pieces by William Schumann, you normally hear it with a much larger group, and so we thought, well, us having eight singers gives us the chance to really delve into the text and approach it from a very text-driven, dramatic perspective. And we found that really, really exciting. Most of our singers are also not only classically trained, but more specifically operatically trained. And that gave us the ability to really tap into some colors and some dramatic expression that is not often heard in some of the works that we'll be presenting. So it was really fun to come up with this. The title is obviously a play on Two Roads Diverge, the first line of one of the Robert Frost poems that actually opens the Frostiana. And, you know, diverging is splitting apart, but what we were doing was bringing together American poets and American composers. So we flipped it on its head and created Two Roads Converged.
Mm. I love that. And I like this idea very, very much. And the fact that this involves not only the Bell Ensemble, but also a group of young poetry enthusiasts from your alma mater, Nick, Washington Park High School in Racine. Tell us about this group and what their participation will be this weekend.
The Washington Park Writers Club, or Poets Club, they go by both names, as I think. I mean, I've heard them described as in both names. They're just a wonderful bunch of students at Park High School, and I've only met the four of them that will be participating in this program. Hmm. Mr. Travis Witt is the faculty advisor of the Writers Club at Washington Park, and so my communication has been with him, and he's been steering the group. This is his second year steering that group, and so he seemed enthusiastic when I first proposed it to him about his group being a part of it, even though this is kind of, I mean, it's the beginning of the school year, and there's a lot going on with teachers and students just kind of getting settled in. But I'm really grateful that he was willing to tackle this project and invite his students to do so with us. They'll be offering recited poetry throughout the program. So between sets of songs or between large pieces of music, we'll have students from the Writers Club at Park present poetry in a spoken delivery.
And what are those poems? I don't mean you don't have to give us a list, but I mean, are these poems that we will then hear sung, or I mean, what? Why are these particular poems on the program? Is it just something favorites that they chose, or
you know,
that you chose?
One of the challenges of a program like this is that you're is trying to be representative, and so we've included voices from diverse communities of American history and current life. And tried to include as diverse a set of voices as possible in selecting these poems, but it quickly became obvious to me that we were going to leave people out. So, if you're coming because your favorite poet is William Wadsworth Longfellow, I'm sorry. They're just, none of his poems quite fit.
Didn't make the cut.
They're wonderful, but not quite bite-sized enough for a program like this. So, let me tell you about a few of the poets that show up here. We have students from Park reading poetry from Walt Whitman, Langston Hughes, and
Edgar Allan Poe.
E.E. Cummings, Maya Angelou, and Mary Oliver.
Ogden Nash,
and Shel Silverstein.
Wow, that's a great array.
Yeah, it you know, we wanted to represent, like Nick is saying, a variety of voices. And we tried to do it in the music as well. So we really hunted down female composers, female poets, African-American composers and poets. So we wanted to be representative of what is, you know, the American canon of poetry and composition. And we also wanted to include other people who maybe hadn't been set to music. So that's where we reached out, and we have Shel Silverstein. I don't know anybody who's written a Shel Silverstein vocal piece. Perhaps they're out there. I just don't know of them. And it's just fun. Also gave us the opportunity to explore different tones in poems. For some reason, a lot of what's ended up on the program takes on this sort of grandiose or pastoral quality in composition.
The poems that were set to music.
Yeah, the poems that were set to music. And so this gave us the ability to explore some of the other side of that. Not that all of the music is in that vein, but definitely the majority of it takes on that quality. And that was something that was surprising to me as we were putting together the program. I never thought that pastoral thing would be part of America as much as, you might think of, Rayfawn Williams or something like that, a composer from the British Isles. Including these other poets gave us the opportunity to showcase, the depth of American poetry.
Right. So the program then is a mix of solo song and then some pieces that are actually also choral pieces that everybody sings together then.
Correct, so. And recited poetry by the poetry club.
Right.
Yeah, we have great voices in the group, and we wanted to give them their individual showcases. So every member of the group will be singing at least one solo piece. The women are splitting a song cycle by Lori Laitman, Four Songs of Emily Dickinson, mm-hmm. and the men will be taking a few songs of William Grant Still, and one song by Ned Roram, and they will be singing those individually. And it's really exciting because you get to hear them as a collective, and then you get to hear those individual voices and the individual idea pop through.
Yeah, I love that. That's just great. We've heard other programs by the Bell Ensemble that have featured that same combination. This conversation reminds me of a really interesting point that was made at a program at Carthage back in December. A piece was commissioned for the Christmas festival to commemorate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. And the poet who was commissioned to write the words was Michael Dennis Brown, who's written the texts for all kinds of great works by Stephen Paulus and others. And he's written lots of just poetry as well that he never intended as lyrics. And I remember him saying in his in this little talk that he gave that in his mind, when you're writing a poem, you're building a house, but when you're writing lyrics, you're building a boat, because the boat is carried by the water of the music, but a poem, in at least in many instances, is something meant to stand on its own and to not move someplace else via music, which I thought was so interesting, and it brings to mind. I don't think that's always true. I don't think he was saying it was always true. It's more that it was true for him. Mm-hmm. But I think it is. It just gets you thinking about what's the difference between a great poem that should probably just remain a poem and a great poem that invites a setting with music.
That was a really fascinating part of our development of this program. It wasn't exactly intentional, but at some point we realized that all of the pieces that we are singing and performing are pieces that set text that was not originally intended to be set to music, with the possible exception of one of the pieces. But all of these were poems that a great American poet wrote intending to be a poem. And then along comes an
American
poem, composer.
Period.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And then along came an American composer who thought the words were so great that they deserved a musical setting and could handle it, because what's also surprising is what music is not. Longfellow, like I mentioned before, I haven't seen any musical settings of Longfellow poetry. Mm. They may exist. I'm sure they exist somewhere. Likewise, Edgar Allan Poe. I love the poetry of Edgar Allan Poe, and it's in some ways so musical in itself. He plays around with rhythm and meter, but maybe for that reason, there aren't a whole lot of settings of his poetry.
Hmm. Well, I think English in general is a pretty difficult language to set to music.
It can be.
It takes a lot of care and a really native understanding of English to set it idiomatically. It doesn't work as fluidly as some of the romantic languages might, and it can be a struggle. So it's really nice to hear the way that these really master composers have taken that language and not had to distort it, not had to break it up, not had to re-influence it, but simply state it in a very concrete way. One of the biggest challenges, though, is anybody who's performed any of these pieces before in large groups, we tend to take, British choral tradition pronunciation and apply it. And it's one of the things that always struck me odd about some of this music is I would go and I would hear other groups sing it. And, you'd get people saying things like, two roads diverged in a yellow wood. Well, I don't know what part of America that is. Mm. So we've taken a lot of care to really approach this text with a very American pronunciation.
Mm. So directness, unfussy.
Yeah, exactly. The way we speak, more so than the way we might, quote unquote, use singing technique for it. And it's brought a new color to them. And a lot of that work was done by the composers themselves. They really have masterfully set what can be some very difficult text.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very good. Nick, real quick, just give us a couple of what you regard as musical highlights of this program coming up this weekend.
Yeah, the culminating piece of the concert is the cycle called Frostiana. This is composed by Randall Thompson, and it sets seven pastoral poems of Robert Frost, including some of those most beloved Frost poems like The Road Not Taken and A Girl's Garden and Stopping by a Snowy Wood. Stopping by a woods on a snowy evening. Yeah, that's it. Leading up to that, earlier in the program, we have a set of songs by Laurie Lateman setting Emily Dickinson texts, a set of William Grant Still songs setting texts from a variety of African-American poets. We have two pieces from William Schumann's Carols of Death. Hmm. William Schumann set three poems by Walt Whitman and called them Carols of Death. They're not really as gruesome as that might lead you to think, though they are kind of mystical and even maybe creepy. but they're really interesting and fascinating explorations of some cool words by Walt Whitman about the end of life and passing.
I have to say, we had the high school poets joined us last night for our dress rehearsal, and those were the ones that they responded the best to. They thought. One of them said, man, they're creepy, but they're so cool. And they really are. I mean, tense harmonies, bitonality. They're probably the most difficult pieces on the program in terms of listenability to those who aren't, well-versed in collegiate and above-level choral music. Mm. But they are wonderfully evocative pieces.
Mm. Very good. Yeah, at a glance, it just looks like a wonderful, varied program, and Laurie Lateman happens to be a friend of mine, so I'm going to send her a Facebook private message as soon as this program's done, just to let her know that she'll be delighted to know that.
Oh, please let her know that I'm a huge, huge, huge fan.
Well, she's a lovely, wonderful, generous person, and she'll be delighted to know that these songs are going to be performed. So, Nick, it's so intriguing where this program is going to first be presented Friday night. Tell our listeners about that.
Friday night, we will be in, I couldn't have imagined a more appropriate place. We will be at Racine Public Library, in the library, performing in the adult section, the second floor, by the east lake-facing windows. And this performance is made possible by the Friends of the Racine Public Library, who have sponsored this particular performance of the program, and we're so grateful to the Friends for this ability to bring this program to such a fitting venue.
Right.
And offer it free of charge.
Right. That's great. And it really is a nice, I mean, it's not typically completely empty, but it's a fairly spacious portion of the library, and with the desks moved away and those beautiful open windows overlooking the lake, that's a wonderful place. I could just imagine this being a perfect spot to do this.
It will be great. I was nervous at first about singing in a carpeted room with lots of bookshelves that I feared would suck up the sound, but we rehearsed there last Sunday, and it was just wonderful.
So, yeah, wonderful.
And then our second performance of Two Roads Converged is this weekend on Sunday, September 23rd at 3 p.m., and that's at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Kenosha on Library Square. That's, again, Sunday the 23rd at 3 p.m. at St. Matthew's, and for that, that's a ticketed performance, $15 for adults, and children and students are always free to Bell Ensemble.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous space in which to perform, so that's exciting indeed. So Two Roads Converge, two performances, one Friday night, the other Sunday afternoon by the Bell Ensemble.
I just want to mention real quick our illustrious pianists for this concert. We are joined, we're very honored to be joined by Melissa Cardamone, who will be playing one of the piano hands in our opening piece. Mm. And then the main accompanist for the program is Alejandro Alumbreros, who is just a hidden jewel of southeastern Wisconsin. He's absolutely concrete musician that puts his heart and soul into his music, and this program would not be the same without his contributions.
Yeah, very, very talented musician in many, many respects. And the husband of Amy Bowdersey, one of your talented singers. So that's very good. Before we let you go, why don't you sketch out the rest of your season for the Bell Ensemble? You certainly are offering up some other wonderful things.
After we conclude our Two Roads Converge program this weekend, we have a whole season full of wonderful programs. Our two major concerts, besides this upcoming one, is a Christmas program, a Bell Ensemble Christmas with Charles Dickens in December on Saturday, December 8th, and Sunday the 9th. A Bell Ensemble Christmas with Charles Dickens imagines what a Christmas program would have been like if Charles Dickens himself had selected the music. So we've identified his favorite contemporary composers, Felix Mendelssohn, Frederick Chopin, Sir Arthur Sullivan, with whom Dickens was actually chums. Mm. They would run around to concerts in London together.
Wow.
So music of Sullivan, Mendelssohn, and Chopin will be featured, as well as many beloved 19th century carols that we still know and love, and that were no less loved, certainly, in Dickens' day. We also expect Charles Dickens himself to appear at this concert, and perhaps even to MC and to host the concert for us, and that's very exciting. Our spring major concert is called Made in America, and March 1st and 3rd we'll be performing Made in America, which is a program highlighting uniquely American forms and styles of music. So it'll begin with early American shape note harmony and African American spirituals, and then move into barbershop and 20th century harmony, 20th century barbershop and vocal jazz idioms, and into more contemporary a cappella styles. I'm really excited about that. These two programs, this first program of American poetry and American composers, and Made in America in the spring, kind of frame what we're thinking of as an American season, or at least a season of celebration of the English language, if we include the Christmas with Charles Dickens. Coming up most near to our immediate concert is Our Song, and this is the Bell Ensemble's annual gala. A Great American Gala. We will be at the Branch at 1501 on November 9th. And we hope lots of you will join us for this.
Where is that?
The Branch at 1501 is in Uptown Racine. It's fairly new.
Okay. Right across the street from the Corner House, for those who are familiar with that Racine traditional establishment.
Okay.
It used to be a bank. I mean, it was originally a bank building, and that's why it's called The Branch. It has existed in a number of different incarnations over the years, but most recently, and I'm really grateful that it's a cafe brunch place by day, and then an event center, event hosting venue by night and on weekends. They do a lot of weddings and celebrations there, and they're going to do our gala. They'll be serving dinner and cocktails, and we will have a program that consists of the Great American Songbook, the informal collection of early 20th century American popular song. And we have the extraordinary benefit that evening of a special guest performance from, Edson, remind me.
I think the listeners might know the name Gregory Berg.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He will be our headliner.
Headliner. Oh boy.
For our show that evening, which is an extraordinary honor for us to have Greg join us and do something that anybody in the community, you've heard him sing these songs before, and he just masterfully sings them. So we're honored to have you there.
Well, thanks. I'm looking forward. Now I know where to go.
So that's Friday, November 9th at 6 p.m. You can get your tickets at thebellensemble.org. And I should say, in speaking of our fundraiser, that is our major fundraiser of the year. The Bell Ensemble has some really exciting news in that we formally incorporated this year, and just less than a month ago, we received our determination from the IRS that we are officially tax exempt and under the 501c3, so contributions to the Bell Ensemble are completely tax deductible now.
Yeah.
So we're hoping you'll make some. Just to mention, the other two programs of our season are continuations of our wine and song pairing series. We have in January our Italian wine and song pairing, Under the Tuscan Moon. That's at Uncorked, the wine shop in downtown Racine. And then in April, we have our French incarnation of wine samples and French song samples, April in Paris.
Wow. That is quite a season, packed with all kinds of things. And knowing you probably have three more seasons worth of programs already up in your noggin, I'm thinking.
Well, we better. Because it's time to start planning.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. Before we let you go, let's have you remind our listeners about what is coming up this weekend.
This weekend, we open the Bell Ensemble's 2018-2019 season with a program called Two Roads Converged, A Marriage of American Voices. It's a celebration of American poets and the American composers that have set their poetry to music. We are joined by the Washington Park High School Poetry Club, who will be reciting poetry throughout the program in what will be a montage, a celebration of American poetry and musical culture. Performances are Friday, September 21st at 7 p.m. at Racine Public Library. That performance is free to the public thanks to the generous sponsorship of the Friends of the Racine Public Library. Our second performance is on Sunday, September 23rd, 3 p.m. at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Kenosha. Tickets are $15 for adults, children, and students are free, and tickets can be obtained at bellensemble.org.
Wonderful. And what a terrific idea, this Two Roads Converge. So Edson Melendez, you're to be commended for yet another great idea and for all the contributions that you've made over the years to the Bell Ensemble. And great to see you again.
Thank you. We hope everybody enjoys it. We're having a great time presenting this music, getting to know this music intimately. And it's going to be an exciting performance with eight really, really exciting voices. Our own Nick Berudian, Ryan White, Michael Mueller, John Stumpf, Karen Archibald, Aaron Sura, Amy Bowdersey, and Shelley Melendez that comprise our eight core singers, and accompanied by Melissa Cardamone and Alejandra Lumbreros.
Fantastic. So we hope a lot of people will turn out to experience Two Roads Converge this weekend. And Nick Berudian, the ultimate the ultimate brain behind all of this wonderful music making. Great to talk with you again. Congratulations on 3 successful seasons, and we wish you great success with season number 4 of the Bell Ensemble.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Thanks for us being here.
The time is exactly 8:45, and you're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD, your gateway to public radio. We talk about one of the most beautiful, varied, and healthy of foods, or potentially healthy foods, soup. And there is no end, of course, to the wonderful things that can be done, particularly with a creative cook at the stove. But, of course, one of the things that's also wonderful about soup is that it is one of those foods which can often evoke the warmest sort of nostalgia and the warmest sort of sense of home and family and connecting you to your own past. So it can be an arena of wonderful, exciting innovation and also comfort food, familiar food in the best sense of the word. Certainly all of that and more is celebrated in a really neat new book called Mr. Sunday's Soups. And it is written by Lorraine Wallace, who happens to be the wife of television journalist Chris Wallace, the daughter-in-law of Mike Wallace. And Sunday soup has become something of a tradition with the Wallace family. And over these last few years, Lorraine Wallace has developed a dazzling array of different delicious soups, which she has shared with her family and her friends. And we're going to be talking about this wonderful tradition which has sprung up in the Wallace home and about the experience she has had of putting together this dazzlingly beautiful cookbook, which is published by Wiley, generously appointed with wonderful photographs and with some great stories about the Wallace family as well. Lorraine Wallace, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Well, it's good to be here, Greg.
I look forward to talking to you very much. Maybe you could just say a quick word about your life before meeting and marrying Chris Wallace.
Well, I lived in the country with my 2 children and was an avid equestrian and gardener there. And I met Chris, and I moved to Washington, and we blended our family. He had 4 children, I had 2. So suddenly we had 6 children to feed all the time.
Hmm. And you describe a family that was sort of busy and frantic with various activities, which we can understand, as well, of course, the complexities of your husband's schedule, particularly on Sundays when he is typically busy hosting one of the most popular programs on Fox News. So this made Sunday lunch an especially challenging meal. Tell us how soup was, in many respects, the answer to that conundrum for you.
Well, soup was our solution because even though we were thrilled that Chris was going to be the anchor of Fox News Sunday, our family still had weekend activities even though he was in workday mode. So the answer for me to get us all together when he came home from asking tough questions on his show around 11:15, he gets up at 5 in the morning on Sundays, is to make a pot of soup. And then our teenagers would be rolling out of bed, and it was a way for me to get us together about 20 or 30 minutes before we went on to do activities, and he went upstairs with the newspaper and the dog and would slip in a little nap, because soup does make you sleepy.
I think one of the things that didn't occur to me until I read a little further and thought about the scenario you were describing is that there are some things about soup that make it sort of uniquely versatile and flexible compared to if you were going to prepare some fancy flank roast or something or some other kind of meal for which precise timing was really important. In some respects, soup is the ideal choice when you're talking about kind of an unpredictable, flexible schedule.
Well, it is, because, you know, it takes about 10 to 15 minutes of prep time to put soup together, and then you let it simmer for an hour. But you have a large quantity of food there in a big pot, and you can freeze it. You can pack it for lunches. You know, you're controlling the sugar and the salt and the fat content of what your family's eating. And it, you know, you can have soup for several days, or you can freeze it for up to 3 to 4 months.
I like how your husband in the foreword to the book says, Lorraine made soups before I started on the show, and they speak to my soul. They evoke a time and place, good times, and great friends. I think that's a really lovely way to think about the place that soup can very easily have in our lives.
Well, it is. I mean, I think that sitting down with your family for a meal, and soup was our solution, but just to get everyone to unplug and drop their schedules for a moment and sit down to talk about happy times. You can talk about disappointing times, but you're coping and you're learning to communicate, and you're not just alone in the world with whatever is going on in your life, because your family is your backbone or your loved one to support you. And soup is, you know, it's easy, it's nutritious, it's I have the book organized by season so that you can find the produce and vegetables and meats around that time of the season. Like, we're coming up to spring, and I have a wonderful salmon chowder in there with made with great clam broth, and then I put a little bit of celery root chopped up in hunks in there, and it's light, but it's still satisfying, as we're all thinking about shedding our winter 5 pounds or whatever, and it's nutritious.
Or it certainly can be. I mean, I suppose the flip side of that is, if you're a bit careless or reckless, you can fill your soup with all kinds of things that are not particularly good for you. But clearly, it's important to you and your husband and your athletic children that these soups, by and large at least, be healthy, nutritious meals.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think right now it's a great time to start cleaning out our pantries. And, you know, if you have a bag of white beans or lentils in there, just, you know, get creative and put some nice chopped carrots and celery and onion and some herbs, and presto, you've got yourself a wonderful meal, and that fills your family up, that's nutritious. And that's what we try to aim to do here. And Soup Sunday became our tradition. And I just think when I decided to write the book, the inspiration was that I had this great collection of recipes that our family just loved, and I just thought other people might like to start their tradition.
I want to mention something that you talk about in your introduction to the book, talking about how the topic of what soup the Wallaces were going to be enjoying together became a really hot topic of conversation in your husband's workplace. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit more about that?
Well, yes. Chris, well, even now today, when he gets his briefcase and he's walking out after doing his show, everybody will go, "Hey, what's the soup this week?" So it's kind of cute to see, you know, the cameramen and the producers and the directors, you know, curious about what the soup is.
Now, growing up, were you someone who was an active participant in cooking? Or, I mean, at what point did this become something that was such an important central interest for you?
Well, I was an avid gardener. I had vegetables and flowers. And then when I had my two children, I only would feed them things that were in season. So if it was fall and it was, you know, I had to make applesauce, I would make it and put it in little containers and freeze it, or butternut squash to puree. So they never really had any jar, you know, baby food. They grew up on things that were grown locally. And so that's kind of how I've always fed my family. And I think they've, you know, got the nutritional benefit of it.
We're speaking with Lorraine Wallace, and we're talking about a new book that's just been published called Mr. Sunday's Soups, in which Lorraine Wallace talks about and shares with us some of the recipes for the spectacular soups that she has been serving to her family for a number of years, particularly on Sundays. I know from reading the book that you also had in your family some kind of tradition at one point that involved Friday nights and some very special meals. Remind me about that.
My mother-in-law, Mrs. Leonard, would come over, and she loves Chinese food, so I created a Chinese chicken noodle soup that I could make earlier in the day, the basis for it. And then when I came home, I just had to boil the noodles and then put the lovely chicken with the lemongrass or lime and cilantro flavor over top of it and put some fortune cookies and spring rolls out, and we suddenly had a Chinese meal that that everyone could have fun with Granny around the table.
So so even though soup is, and sundae are very tightly woven for you, it's not limited only to that particular day of the week.
Oh, absolutely not. And I think, you know, you can make a pot of soup on Monday and have a Wednesday night soup, you know, Wednesday night supper if you want to.
Hmm. You know, you mentioned something about if you have a bag of lentils, you know, get creative and so on. Could you just offer kind of a general word of advice for someone who feels this, kind of feels maybe both a literal and figurative hunger to be creative, for instance, in putting soup together, but maybe is afraid to be creative or wonders just how to start, or maybe what some guiding principles are in just how to combine flavors together in ways that are going to make sense and ultimately be successful?
Well, I think if you're really a nervous cook, just follow a recipe and taste it. And then if you have a special herb or something you particularly enjoy, substitute it in there if you think it works. You know, if you don't have leeks in your refrigerator, but you have a white onion, chop it up finely. It will act just like a leek. You can always start with just a simple vegetable base with, you know, a tablespoon of oil and some onion chopped up, some carrot and some celery. Add some broth to it and maybe a can of kidney beans, and suddenly you've got a little soup. You know, I mean, and chop some herbs, put it on top, and you're like, oh, that's not bad. I could do that. But, you know, follow a recipe. A lot of things that our children like to do was they like to come home and pick the soup that they want me to prepare for that Sunday that we all sit, and then they like me to put it in containers, and it walks out the door to their refrigerators.
Lorraine Wallace, whose husband Chris Wallace is an anchor for Fox News, and Lorraine Wallace's book is called Mr. Sunday's Soups, and it is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, you'll hear my interview with Don Perlman, the author of a really entertaining and interesting book called Football for a Buck. It charts the rise and the demise of the USFL, the United States Football League. This was a football league that was created as a rival league for the NFL with the hopes that it would equal the NFL in popularity and maybe force a merger the way the old AFL had done some years before. It did not work out. In fact, the USFL ended up being a crashing failure in its third season. And the demise of the USFL, interestingly enough, has something to do with a gentleman by the name of Donald Trump, who actually came aboard kind of late in the game as an owner of one of the USFL teams. And it was a couple of the choices that Donald Trump made that actually helped lead to the USFL's ultimate failure. It's all charted in this really, really interesting book, and you'll hear my interview with the author tomorrow on The Morning Show. To bring us up to the top of the hour, just a brief sampling of the spectacularly talented and innovative group that is performing at Carthage College tonight, the first chamber music concert season of the season, a group called Project Trio, string bass, cello, and flute. And they are going to be joined by more than 100 young orchestral musicians in Kenosha and Racine for this concert. It's again tonight, 7:30 in Sieber Chapel. It is a concert free and open to the public, but you are asked to reserve a ticket ahead of time by either calling 551-6661 or going to carthage.edu/tickets. Here is a little bit of Project Trio.